This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Menopause, our topic in this portion of the program. Listeners, I welcome your questions this afternoon for Dr. Christian Northrup. Dr. Northrup is the author of Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom. Her new book is titled The Wisdom of Menopause, Creating Physical and Emotional Health During the Change. Dr. Northrup is an obstetrician gynecologist who has practiced medicine for more than 20 years. She's a believer in conventional medicine and complementary medicine. This description of her work comes from her homepage at drnorthrup.com. The intent of her work is to help women learn how to create health daily in their lives by understanding that their bodies are largely a barometer of the quality of their thoughts, relationships, diet, and environment. Dr. Northrup has had 4 popular specials on public television and has made several appearances on Oprah. She co-founded the Women to Women Healthcare Center in Yarmouth, Maine, and is past president of the American Holistic Medical Association. Listeners, I encourage your questions and comments. Join us with a telephone call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else in Illinois or Indiana, call toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. 1-800-222-WILL. Dr. Northrup, good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Hot flashes, insomnia, irritability, thinning bones, an empty nest, and more. Where's the wisdom in all this?
It's all the breakdown to breakthrough is what that is. And when you heed, I would say, the dictates, the ever louder dictates of your soul, you can make this a time of rebirth and new growth. But remember, as always, rebirth and new growth is always built upon the composting of one's past into rich, fertile soil.
Hmm. You say it's important that we listen to our bodies. What can we learn by listening to our bodies?
First of all, the mind and body are a seamless web of connections, and we know, for instance, that hot flashes are increased by stress of all kinds, whether that's dietary stress from drinking too much wine or eating too much sugar, or emotional stress in relationships. All of those things increase hot flashes, which can be relieved 90% of the time just from meditation, where one quiets one's mind and body. So when a woman begins to connect the dot between her life and her symptoms, she's in an empowered position to take control of her life. And then it really doesn't matter how she gets relief for her symptoms. What's important is that she understand that the symptoms are connected somehow with her life. She's not to blame for them. She must be responsible to them. It's a very different way of thinking.
Mm. You tell your readers you wouldn't have written this book without having experienced menopause yourself.
That's correct.
Yet you've had to have learned a great deal as an OBGYN from your patients. I've got 2 questions here. What's been the greatest lesson you've learned from your patients, and what has your experience taught you about menopause?
I've always found that my patients' knowledge of their own bodies or their sixth sense about what was going on, and what was their biggest fear. In other words, I've always listened to what patients had to say about their experience of an illness or a symptom. And that has helped both of us make maximum use of the diagnostic testing that's available in modern medicine. In other words, if someone has a feeling that something's wrong with an ovary, then I test for that. I have also known throughout the last 10 years anyway of my career that those areas of women's health that we are most afraid of, the menstrual cycle, labor, and menopause, are always the places where we will find the most power. If our culture steers you away from those places where your deepest wisdom comes up, you can be sure that that's where you should go to look. And so when I went through my own menopause, having known that intellectually, found out that I was right on the money, but could not have predicted how my own life would change as a result of that.
Mm. What's been the biggest change for you?
Oh, the biggest change for me has been going from a married woman of 24 years to a single woman of 51 years.
Mm. That's a big change.
It's an enormous change. It's a huge change. It brings up all of women's worst fears. Will I be alone? Will I be abandoned? Am I no longer attractive? Who will ever love me? I have a big scarlet letter on my forehead now. All of that. And what I found was my willingness to walk over those fiery coals has transformed my life and my hopes for the future. I have absolute faith in the process of life and that I'm at a completely new beginning. It's very interesting to me that when I go places where I was, you know, like back to some of the public television stations, people tell me that I look years younger. And the only reason for that is that I have been willing to leave some of the relationships in my life that no longer served me, that were in fact draining my energy. This is so misunderstood that I would, you know, like to start right off by letting all listeners know that I do not prescribe divorce at midlife as an answer to anyone's problems. But what I can tell you is that the midlife changes in the brain associated with menopause will uncover areas of discomfort and unfinished business that have been there for years, but which you now have the ego strength and the skills to deal with once and for all so that you can make the second half of your life the healthiest that it can possibly be.
Yeah. You write in the book that if we defy our body's wisdom, we might experience disastrous consequences for our health as well as the health of our significant other. Talk with us about that.
I believe that when you, let's say that you have a depression and lack of libido, lack of sex drive, there is no good physiologic reason why sex drive should go away at midlife, because the ovaries do not stop producing testosterone. In fact, for a while, they increase the production of testosterone. And the life force, or kundalini as it's been called in Sanskrit, actually begins to rise through the different areas of the body and awaken life force. So many women have increased sex drive during the menopausal transition. But if your experience is that your depression worsens or that you lose your sex drive, you need to look at how your own batteries need to be replenished. If you simply think that the whole problem is a lack of the right hormone or that something is missing in your mate or whatever it is, you won't be able to mine the riches available to you from this experience. Many women do experience a need to withdraw from the demands of their daily life. Sometimes a weekend retreat is all that's necessary. This is a time when women have to stand up for themselves. And when, in the case of a married couple, when each of them can respect what's happening for the other in an equal and mutual way, then they can have a whole new life together. If, for instance, and I just heard this story on the road, someone was dating a man, she was 35, and he had just gone through a divorce, and he said, at menopause, my wife went crazy. And so, you know, he just divorced her and started to date women 20 years younger. That's a man who is putting his health at risk. If he really believes that this woman he spent 25 years with suddenly just went crazy, he's deluding himself. And we know that men die, on average, 7 years sooner than women. There's no biologic or physiologic reason why that should happen. But at midlife, women need to find their voice and their creativity, and men need to open their hearts. And many times, men feel more like nesting. They're tired of being in charge. They're tired of going out there to fight the world. Women are just getting into gear to go out into the world and have a more significant role in the outer world of their lives. And I talked to couple after couple who's in the midst of negotiating this switch in energy, and it can be very complementary.
Yeah.
As long as we let go of preconceived notions of what it's going to look like.
Yeah. It's interesting that my mother experienced some of those feelings of the empty nest, yet at the same time, she was ready for us little fledglings to get out of the house.
Yes, it's like it's both things are true, and I think you have to let yourself experience the empty nest, which is this, it is biological, it's this pull on your heart that I described in the book that I was shocked by, you know, and my patients have been shocked by. We're talking, you know, big-time CEOs who fly all over the world. This one woman talking about stopping at a traffic light and just bursting into tears when her son left home for college. And then you let yourself grieve, and the new energy comes in where the grief was before. Later, then, the prospect of having your children move back home when you've created your own space and you're finally creating it on your own terms is a chilling prospect indeed. You know?
What are the issues for a woman, for a couple that have not had children?
They're actually very much the same. There's often a sense of a need for a career change, a need for a move. One of the other things you see all the time is that a couple will finally decide at midlife they have to renovate the house. They've got to get it right. This is the time to add the closet or whatever. The home becomes symbolic, I think, of the regeneration going on in the body. And one of the stories in my book is a couple where the woman realized that she couldn't create the home she wanted and have her husband living in it, though they still had a good relationship. But she said there were a lot of things he was not willing to change. Luckily, she was in a financial position to buy another house very close by. And so the two of them have negotiated their midlife changes by living in separate homes. This is, again, it's an extreme example, but it does speak to the fact that each member of the couple needs his or her own space in a new way. Often, the woman is the one who must reclaim her space because probably for the past 20 years, whether she has children or not, she's been the chief cook and bottle washer, the one who picks up things, does the grocery shopping. 70-80% of all the purchases in homes are made by women. The medical decisions are made by women. She would finally like to have those around her take care of themselves while she learns how to take care of herself. So it may be that her mate needs to become more autonomous. I'm sure you've met couples where the woman says, I'm living in dread of the day Joe retires, because on weekends or even when he's got some free time, he follows me around the house like a puppy. So all of my days of having my time to myself might be over when he retires. And we also know that many men, when they retire, are dead in 2 to 3 years. Everyone needs a creative outlet, and retirement can be very deadly, particularly for men.
Very interesting. This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Our guest this afternoon, Dr. Christiane Northrup. We're talking with her about menopause. Her latest book is titled The Wisdom of Menopause, Creating Physical and Emotional Health During the Change. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I encourage your questions for our guest this afternoon. You can join us with a telephone call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. This is a question I'm sure every woman in perimenopause asks. Is it me or is it my hormones? How do you sort out, you know, what's what?
Okay, and that's a wonderful question because it speaks to one of the myths that I would really like to shatter, and that is the myth of raging hormones. It's always you, and it's always your hormones simultaneously, and the reason for that is that thoughts and emotions affect hormone levels, and hormone levels affect thoughts and emotions, and you really can never sort it out, but I will tell you this. Fluctuating hormone levels, whether they be postpartum, during the time around your period that we associate with PMS, or the perimenopausal hormonal shifts, all of those times tend to uncover the unfinished business that is already there in your life, but which you can no longer tolerate. So that's really important. At the same time, let me be very clear that there are literally hundreds and hundreds of choices for treatment of those hormonal swings so that suffering is optional. So many women just need high-dose soy for PMS or perimenopausal symptoms. And the more we study soy, the more we find out that it builds bones, it prevents heart disease, and a recent study shows that it's better than estrogen at helping the brain prevent Alzheimer's disease. So there are many, many alternatives that really, really help women to not suffer from the things we traditionally associate with fluctuating hormone levels.
Hmm. What are your thoughts about hormone replacement therapy?
Hormone replacement therapy can be an absolute boon, particularly for those women whose menopause is brought on by surgery or by illness. So if you have your ovaries removed surgically, say at age 37, 38, even 45, 50, you're in instant menopause. That is not physiologic. That's a woman who needs replacement doses of estrogen, progesterone, and or testosterone. And we always think of hormone replacement as estrogen, don't we? I mean, it's synonymous. What's very important from my point of view is if you're going to be replacing something that's missing, then replace what is missing. Possibly do measurements in the blood or in the saliva of hormone levels, and then give the lowest dose of a bioidentical hormone that replaces what's missing. And when I say bioidentical hormone, I'm talking about a hormone that matches exactly what's found in the female human body, not something made in a lab so it can be patented, so that a drug company can make a profit, but that doesn't match anything found in the female human body or something that's found in the urine of pregnant horses.
How often do women have their hormone levels tested? How often will a doctor suggest that?
Very much depends on the doctor. I think it's a nice idea, if women can do this, to get a baseline level in the mid-luteal phase. That's about a week before their period is due, or, you know, about 10 days before their period is due. Get a salivary baseline of androgen, estrogen, and progesterone, say, at age 40. And then, should they ever decide to have hormone replacement, they'll know exactly what level they're shooting for. See, far too many women are overdosed with hormones because the same dose is given to everyone. Hormone replacement is an art as much as it is a science. Some women do very well with patches and with the transdermal skin preparations. Others do better with pills, and it can take a while to get the dose right. And a lot of women will go in, they'll get a hormone prescription, they take it for a month, they have side effects, and then they just stop the whole business when they might be helped a great deal by hormone replacement, but they haven't given it a chance, or they haven't found a doctor who will work with them in partnership to get the right dose of the right hormones. We now have what are called compounding pharmacies all over the United States. These are pharmacies that specialize in working with doctors to compound a specific individualized hormone replacement regimen for an individual woman. And that's what I call real modern medicine.
Hmm. I was completely unaware of that.
Yes. You see, most people are, because you listen to television ads and you see an ad for, let's say, Prempro, which is Premarin, made from the urine of pregnant horses, and Provera. Provera is a synthetic progestin that has definitely been found in humans to narrow coronary arteries. It can be a dangerous drug. It's a synthetic progestin. But we have readily available natural bioidentical progesterone that gives the same benefit without the risks. And we have 17-beta-estradiol in patch form and pill form. It's exactly what the female human body makes, and it doesn't have the risks of Premarin. Premarin is the most prescribed estrogen replacement, but because it's made from the urine of pregnant horses, the breakdown products metabolically in the female human body are not like anything found in the female human body, and in fact, they are biologically stronger than female human estrogens and have been found to cause DNA damage in breast tissue. And also the dosage varies tremendously. So a lot of women are given the same dose, and you might have two women with a 20-fold difference in blood levels on the same dose. So I simply argue for individualized medicine using the hormones normally found in the human body, and that simply makes sense. From an evolutionary point of view, I trust Mother Nature and her design for hormones far more than I trust a pharmaceutical device that only has 50 years of evolution.
When it comes to measuring hormone levels, you mentioned a blood test and a salivary test.
Mm-hmm.
Is one or the other better?
No. It just depends on what the doctor is most used to. I prefer the salivary levels because a woman can do them at home. She doesn't have to, first thing in the morning, she can just spit into a vial and send it off to the lab. Many doctors, though, spend a lifetime being familiar with blood levels, so they're just happier interpreting those. But both are completely valid. And the salivary hormone levels have been used in research for 20 years. So they're very well tested, very well documented to be accurate.
It's interesting to note that you note that women in different cultures have different symptoms.
Yes.
How do symptoms vary, and why is that the case?
Well, first of all, if you look at Chinese factory workers, only 17% of them, when they go through menopause, have any symptoms, such as hot flashes. In the United States, 90% of women or more have hot flashes. Two reasons for this. One, in China, the average person is eating 100 grams of soy every single day. And soy contains natural estrogen-like compounds that just support one hormonally as you go through the change. If you have too much estrogen in your body, they protect your breasts and your uterus and your ovaries from overstimulation by estrogen. If you don't have enough, then they act like estrogens. It's a wonderful quality of plants, and they're called adaptogens. So women with breast cancer, for instance, do not need to worry about whole soy food. On the other hand, in China, there's great reverence for aging.
Mm.
And so one of my patients, in fact, went to China, and she had arthritis in both hips. All the while she was in China, she said people looked upon her with respect, and she felt very seen. You know how many times older women are invisible in our society. She felt seen and revered, and she told me she had no arthritis pain whatsoever the entire time she was in China. In all cultures in which a woman's status improves following menopause, there are fewer menopausal symptoms.
Interesting.
And that's just, that's part of the mind-body connection, you see. And we're all part of our culture. I mean, you remember when we had the Olympics in Norway, how many Norwegians won gold medals? It's because when the Norwegians are on their home turf, their performance, their athletic performance was enhanced.
It's the home field advantage.
That's it, and it really is. You've got your whole first chakra, as it were, your tribe, rooting for you, and that is felt by your body. It's a real effect.
Mm.
So in the United States, if you are a menopausal woman, let's say if you were a beautiful 25-year-old woman and you've turned heads every time you walked into a room for the last 30 years and now you don't, that will be perceived by you as a profound loss of power.
Mm.
And that's why at menopause, you need to connect with your spirit. You need to connect with your soul, because the only power that will sustain you now is the real power available to you through understanding that you are more than your physical body.
Mm.
And that's part of the wisdom of menopause. In traditional cultures, women were not ever allowed to be shamans or medicine women until they have gone through menopause. And then they are felt to be far more efficient channels of universal intelligence. We have some scientific evidence that would support that, in that the FSH and LH, those are neurotransmitter levels in the brain, those peak during ovulation, when a woman is maximally open to cross-pollination of all kinds, I say, whether to get pregnant or to come up with an idea for a novel, this sort of thing. After menopause, those levels are high for the rest of her life. So I call it being maximally open to other points of view and going from an alternating current of wisdom to a direct current of wisdom. That's a hugely untapped resource in our society, which is why I say that the baby boom women, the generation that said, don't trust anyone over 30, the generation that transformed childbirth and birth control and women's health in general, is now going through menopause in droves, and menopause will never be the same.
We've got a number of listeners waiting to talk with us. Let's go to our first caller this afternoon on the toll-free line. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm interested in knowing if a postmenopausal woman has gone many years without replacement therapy, is there any benefit in beginning again?
Well, that's a great question, and it actually depends on how you're doing. For instance, if you were to get a bone density test done and know that your bones are completely fine and that your lipid profile, your cholesterol, your HDL, LDL, triglycerides, if those are fine, if you're strong and healthy, and you have no evidence of any deterioration, then chances are you're doing fine and you don't need anything. On the other hand, there's a great deal to be said for a little bit of hormone replacement or the alternatives, such as high doses of soy, flaxseed, that kind of thing, if you're having the early signs of bone loss or if you're having a high cholesterol and so on. The point I make in the book is there is nothing inherent about the change of ovarian function, which is all that menopause is from a physiologic point of view. There's nothing inherent about that that should cause women's hearts and bones and brains to deteriorate. So it's possible through a healthy lifestyle to remain completely healthy and not to deteriorate with or without hormones.
Fine. Thank you very much for the answer.
Okay.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Our guest this afternoon, Dr. Christian Northrup, the author of The Wisdom of Menopause, Creating Physical and Emotional Health and Healing During the Change. Let's go to another listener, this one on line one. Hello.
Yeah, hello. My wife's got your book, and she's very demanding about the health books that she purchases. She's got quite a few, but she's really satisfied with yours.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, she's had it for about 4 or 5 days, and she keeps dipping into it and coming up with a lot of info. It's really well written and really, you kind of run all these topics down much better than most books.
Well, thank you.
She really likes it. I was leafing through it, and I saw on the index you mentioned piezoelectric effect, and I was curious how you could possibly stick that in to your book on menopause. And I looked and I saw you were talking about the way bones react to stress.
Right.
And I was hoping you might have a might have heard maybe post writing this book some sort of trick to get your wife to do a little bit more in terms of weight bearing exercise, because I'm finding it really hard to get her to do anything like that.
Yes, I'm really happy you brought that up because there is no question that vertical vectors of force on bones keeps minerals coming into the bones to keep the bones strong and healthy. In fact, in the studies of Miriam Nelson out of Tufts University, she found that women who did 2 40-minute sessions of weight training per week were able to increase their bone density far more than on Premarin. And the unexpected side effect is that the women felt more capable in all levels of their lives, so they got out more. They weren't afraid to drive alone places. In other words, when your bones and your muscles are strong, you feel empowered in the world. So I would recommend that she log on to the website strongwomen.com or get the book Strong Women Stay Young by Miriam Nelson. And depends on if she's an individual exerciser or a group person. If she's a group person, then I would recommend that she go to a gym that's real friendly to women. Some women are afraid of the gyms where men pump iron because it can be a little intimidating to get used to it. But get a personal trainer, perhaps go with a friend. And we're just talking 2 times a week. It's really simple. I keep the weights by my television. I think that once you read the book, Strong Women Stay Young, or log on to the website, get the video, whatever it takes, the payoff is so huge. Women who do weight training and who exercise like that live on average 6 years longer than other women, but those are quality years. So she can keep up with you, and she can keep up with your kids if you've got any. And it's my mother, as we speak, is climbing Mount Washington on snowshoes with a friend of hers who's 86. And there's got to be 5-6 feet of snow up there, so they're going up in snowshoes. That's what's possible. But it's not possible if you sort of decide that you need to be a couch potato at age 49.
Luckily, this radio station, or this program in particular, archives it shows, so because she can't listen to it right now, and I'll have her listen to it later, and I'm glad you went into it in such depth. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And since we did have a gentleman call in, I would like to say that I have gotten great feedback from men. A research scientist, just wrote me and said that he was very happy to read the beginning section of the book because his wife wants to go out and start her own business, which he's supporting, except that he really wants to retire. And through reading the book, he was able to understand her career drive, so he feels that it will help their marriage be better than ever. Mm. So for men who love their wives, sisters, or mothers, this is a good way to just learn about what women are going through, and then they can help support her. And I'll tell you what, there is really nothing more supportive in a woman's life than the love of the men in her life who really see what her needs are and just give her the space to get them met.
Hmm. Before we go to the next caller, I want to mention our website here at WILL, which is WILL.UIUC.edu. And we stream live 24 hours a day, and there are also, as the caller mentioned, programs archived on the website, so you can listen back to a program at any time. And Dr. Northrup, you have a website. You want to give us your website?
Yes, it's Dr. Northrup. That's just D-R with no period, NORTHRUP.com.
Okay. Next we go to a listener on line 2. Good afternoon.
Is that me?
That's you.
Oh, okay. I feel very distressed by the company that produces Premarin. They keep 65,000 horses to get this pregnant mare's urine, and they treat them very cruelly.
Yes.
And so I was wondering if you could talk some more about that and about why it's not good for women to take that.
Right. Regardless of your angle on Premarin, I don't think that it's a very good replacement estrogen. There's the whole issue of cruelty to horses. Now, I have had the company write to me personally and say they no longer treat the horses cruelly. On the other hand, I'm good friends with a veterinarian who used to work during vet school at those Premarin farms, and she said, believe me, the horses are not treated well. I haven't been to them myself, but I know that the PETA people, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, send out literature that's pretty chilling. And given that, there are so many other equally or more effective estrogens, if one wants to take estrogen replacement, there's really no reason to take Premarin, either from, if you know, the ethical treatment of animals point of view, or the just what it does in your body point of view. Premarin, as I said before, breaks down into metabolically stronger metabolites that I think are far more apt to be associated with an increased risk of cancer. And as probably all of you know, the government just put estrogen on the list of things that potentially cause cancer. So if you're going to be on a little estrogen, be on the one that's possibly the safest at the lowest dose. And what's safer will always be the kind of estrogen that God designed to have in your body in the first place.
And the other thing is, if those horses are treated so cruelly, wouldn't you think that the urine products would have a lot of bad things, stress hormones in them that wouldn't be good?
Well, I think that's absolutely a possibility. And then you speak to there the energetics of something. Yes, there might be high levels of norepinephrine or the stress hormones in the urine. That's very true. And then there's the connection. You know, you think of adolescent girls and their love for horses, which represent freedom and power.
Mm-hmm.
Most women do not like the idea of putting something in their body that's associated with cruel treatment of a horse. It just doesn't feel right once they know about it. Now, let me just say that because Premarin was the first estrogen that was ever used, because we didn't have the technology to make bioidentical estrogen from soybeans and yams the way we do now, Premarin came on the scene in 1949, and we didn't have anything else at the time. It kind of got a toehold in the marketplace, and most all of the research, including the Women's Health Initiative, the largest taxpayer dollar-supported studies on whether hormone replacement is good for all women, they're all using Premarin as the gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, it's made its way into the psyche of the medical establishment in ways that aren't being questioned quite enough. And hopefully questions like yours will, voices will be raised, and women just need to know they have a choice.
I think that company has done a number on the doctors.
Yes, and doctors need to open their minds a bit as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your comments.
Thank you.
Other calls are welcome. Questions and comments, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. You devote a chapter in your book to diet, and I think this is really important. Give us some of your best advice about diet at midlife for women.
Well, first thing women need to know is that as estrogen levels are changing, the body, in its infinite wisdom, will try to create a little more fat because fat produces estrogen. So at midlife, what women notice is they begin to get a little spare tire around their waist, or they develop a belly that they never had before. And this is very distressing in our culture in particular.
Mm.
A little bit of extra fat is not a problem. The problem is that 50% of the population is already obese. When you add the menopausal changes to that and the foods that cause that, which tend to be refined carbohydrates, too much food in general, and alcohol, which is a refined carbohydrate par excellence, you get a situation that puts you at risk for heart disease, the number one killer of women, and also breast cancer and osteoporosis. We're beginning to see that excess levels of insulin, the hormone that helps glucose go into the cell to be used, when that hormone's available in excess quantities, as it is in diabetes or adult onset diabetes, it's associated with every kind of degenerative disease we've got, including arthritis, premature aging of the skin, atherosclerosis in artery walls, and so on. So, at midlife, the diet, you need to cut back on refined carbohydrates, go with whole foods, you need adequate amounts of protein, you need some healthy fats. This is a time of life when if women have been on a diet that is too low in fat, their brains will begin to suffer, the mood swings will be worse. You need a good source of omega-3 fats. That's found in organ meats, eggs, salmon. It's also found in certain kinds of algae and is available as a supplement known as DHA, not to be confused with DHEA, which is a hormone. But this is an omega-3 fat. And then you need to exercise. In other words, your bad dietary habits that allowed you to eat chips and sit around and maintain your normal weight for the first maybe 25, 30, 40 years of your life, if you don't change them, the same habits will turn you into an obese midlife couch potato. This is the wake-up call. You have to grow or die here. And this is like a turning point in your life. If you take care of your body now, your body will take care of you. But you can't continue the abuse that you might have used up till this time.
I like that image of your mother in snowshoes. I'm going to keep that in mind.
Oh, you really should. I mean, in my next presentation, I'm showing an updated slide. The one I showed on public television, I think she was 70 in Yosemite with a big backpack, but now she's 75, and it looks like the backpack is even bigger. I mean, she's a piece of work, I'll tell you.
Let's talk with another listener on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi. One of the things that happened to me and seems to happen to an awful lot of women that I know is sleep problems.
Yes.
And I didn't know what to do about it except to get up and go someplace else and read until I fell asleep again. But then I took a series of yoga classes when I had the opportunity to do so, and I discovered that there's an exercise they do or a pose they do at the end. It's called the corpse pose.
Yes, yes.
And I discovered I was just kind of drifting off into la-la land, and I thought to myself, why don't I see if I can do that in bed and make my breathing more complicated. I learned some breathing techniques in another yoga class. And I can now get myself back to sleep unless I'm really, really into thinking about solving the world's problems. And if I can, making your breathing more complex and getting your body really totally relaxed, including relaxing your jaw and your tongue and your eyes, things I hadn't thought about relaxing until I took this class, all those things help me get right back to sleep. I can get back to sleep in about 4 or 5 deep breaths, and I did not used to be able to do that. And I would think that for some reason this information isn't getting out to people. There might be other ways to do this, but it's really helpful to be able to get a good night's sleep to function.
It is absolutely crucial, and many women are kept awake by hot flashes and night sweats that keep them from getting into a deep sleep because they're always kind of waking up to take the covers off. Did you have that?
Wait. But I could get back to sleep again
because
I had this this thing to do.
Well, you see, that's what we were saying earlier. The power of the mind-body connection is such that you can produce all the chemicals associated with rest and relaxation just by doing things with your breath and with your body. Yoga, of course, is just centuries old. And it's one of the clearest routes to mind-body unity that there is. So I'm really glad you called because it's so key to know that we, in most cases, we have the wherewithal right within our own bodies to create the symptom relief and the peace that we are seeking. Very important point.
And it's a great point to go out on, because we're out of time. We have to leave it there.
Okay.
And it's a good point to go out on. And I want to thank you, Dr. Northrup, and all our callers this afternoon.
Great. Thank you.
Take care. Dr. Christian Northrup has been our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. She is the author of The Wisdom of Menopause, Creating Physical and Emotional Health and Healing During the Change. The book is published by Bantam.